All right, so today we're diving deep into a fascinating case that went all the way to the Oregon Supreme Court. Peace Riverseed Cooperative v. Proceeds Marketing.
This one really digs into some of the nitty-gritty details about sellers' remedies under the UCC, especially when you're dealing with fixed-price contracts and a buyer decides to back out.
Yeah, it's like a crash course in what happens when those fixed-price deals go sour, you know?
Absolutely, and it highlights some crucial questions. For instance, when a buyer breaches, does the seller have the freedom to choose which method of calculating damages works best for them, even if it means they recover more?
Right. Like, they have a couple of options under the UCC, but can they actually pick and choose based on what gets them the most favorable outcome?
That's one of the big issues. And then there's the whole matter of attorney fees. How clear does that contract language have to be for the winning party to actually get their legal fees covered?
It feels like those clauses can sometimes be a bit of a gray area, right?
Definitely. This case really dives into how specific that language needs to be.
So to really understand the nuances here, we need some context. We're talking about a Canadian seed seller, Peace River Seed Cooperative, going up against an Oregon-based buyer, Proceeds Marketing. And of course, they're operating in the grass seed market, which, as anyone who's followed commodities knows, can be pretty volatile.
Yeah, those prices can swing wildly. And they had these fixed price contracts in place, which means they agreed on a set price regardless of what the market did.
And as you might have guessed, that's where things get interesting, because the market took a pretty steep nosedive.
It did. So let's break down exactly how this all unfolded. The heart of this case really lies in those contracts. Peace River, the Canadian seller, had multiple contracts with Proceeds, the Oregon buyer. The agreements were to supply specific quantities of grass seed, and crucially, these were at fixed prices over a span of 2 years. A key element was that Proceeds, being the buyer, had the responsibility to give Peace River instructions on when and where to ship the seed.
Makes sense. You got to know where the goods are going, right?
Precisely. And here's where things go south. The price of grass seed, it just plummets. Proceeds, initially, they accepted a few shipments, but then radio silence.
Classic, right.
They stopped providing those crucial shipping instructions for the rest of the seed.
So basically, they're signaling, we're not taking the rest of this seed, right?
That's how the Oregon Supreme Court saw it. They termed it anticipatory repudiation, basically a heads up that they weren't planning to honor the rest of the contract.
Now, I'm guessing Peace River wasn't too thrilled about that.
Not one bit. They tried everything to get Proceeds back on track, kept asking for those shipping instructions so they could fulfill their end of the deal.
But Proceeds just kept ghosting them.
Pretty much. So Peace River ultimately decided to throw in the towel and cancel the remaining contracts. Now they're stuck with a whole lot of grass seed that Proceeds isn't taking.
So what do they do? Just sit on a mountain of grass seed?
Well, they did try to resell some of it, but that process, it dragged on for about 3 years.
Oh, wow. So this wasn't a quick resolution at all.
Not by a long shot. This case took a winding path through the legal system. First, it went to arbitration, and you know what? Peace River won.
All right, victory.
But hold your horses, because that arbitration award deemed non-binding.
Oh, that's gut punch.
It is. So back to square one. The case then went to trial court.
Right. New game, new rules.
Sort of. The trial court judge, they opted for a more middle-of-the-road approach. They decided Peace River could only get the lesser of two damage calculations, either the one based on the drop in market price or their actual losses from reselling the seed.
Hmm. I can see why Peace River might not have been satisfied with that.
They weren't. So they took it up a notch and appealed to the Oregon Court of Appeals. And guess what?
They got a better result.
They did. The appeals court reversed the trial court's decision and sided with Peace River.
So this is getting pretty serious now.
It is. And it led to Proceeds pushing this all the way up to the Oregon Supreme Court, the highest court in the state.
So by the time it gets to the Supreme Court, we've got two really major legal questions they need to figure out.
We do.
The first one revolves around how to calculate those damages. Like, could Peace River, the seller, use the market price of grass seed at the time Proceeds bailed on the contract using the formula in UCC Section 27081? Or did they have to stick with the price they actually got when they resold the seed using UCC Section 2706? And the million-dollar question, could they choose the method that gave them more money?
Absolutely. And the second big question centers around attorney fees. Remember those Norum seed rules that were part of the contract?
Like the industry-specific rules.
Exactly. Well, one of those rules stated that charges for a collection of payment would be on Proceeds, the buyer. So the court had to determine if that general phrase actually meant proceeds had to cover Peace River's legal bills for this whole ordeal.
So essentially, it's about whether that language is strong enough to force the losing party to pay up for the winner's lawyers.
It is, and it really highlights a tension between giving sellers flexibility to recover their losses and the courts being super strict about enforcing agreements on legal costs.
Okay, so let's delve into the whole damages issue here.
Uh-huh.
You mentioned the UCC has a couple of different ways to figure out a seller's losses when a buyer breaches.
It does.
The first method, under UCC Section 2-7081, looks at the market price of the goods, when and where the buyer should have accepted delivery. It compares that to the unpaid contract price. Then you add any incidental damages the seller incurred, minus any expenses they saved because the buyer didn't hold up their end of the bargain.
Right. The second way, found in UCC Section 2706, focuses on what happened when the seller resold the goods. It calculates the difference between the initial contract price and the price they got on resale. And again, you factor in any incidental damages for the seller and subtract any expenses they didn't have to pay because of the breach. Now remember, the trial court took that lesser of two damages approach, basically limiting Peace River to whichever calculation gave them less money.
But the Oregon Supreme Court, they weren't having any of that.
Not at all. They rejected the lesser of two damages idea outright, and they also threw out the whole election of remedies doctrine in this context.
Can you explain what election of remedies means in this context? I feel like that's a term that can be a bit confusing.
Absolutely. The election of remedies doctrine, it's like saying, hey, you have to pick one legal path and stick with it. So in this case, it would mean Peace River could only choose one way to calculate their damages, either market price or resale price, and they couldn't change their mind later on.
Gotcha. So the Supreme Court basically said, nope, the UCC doesn't work that way.
Exactly. They even quoted their own opinion, which stated very clearly, the UCC expressly allows cumulative remedies unless double recovery occurs.
That seems pretty definitive.
It is. It essentially means that the UCC generally allows sellers to pursue multiple avenues for compensation after a breach, as long as they're not getting paid twice for the same losses.
And what about the whole concept of fixed price risk allocation?
That's a really important aspect of this case. When Peace River and Proceeds agreed on those fixed prices, they were both, in a sense, gambling on what the market would do.
It's like they each took a side of the bet.
Exactly. And Proceeds couldn't then turn around and expect Peace River to shoulder the entire burden when the market took a turn for the worse. The court emphasized that a buyer can't just break a contract and then force the seller to absorb all the financial repercussions.
It's a good reminder that agreements are meant to be honored, even when the market throws a curveball.
Definitely. And here's another crucial point that often gets overlooked. The court clarified that the UCC doesn't require sellers to resell goods when a buyer breaches.
Oh, that's interesting. So it's not like they have to mitigate their damages by finding a new buyer?
Right. Reselling is presented as an option under the UCC, not a legal obligation.
I see. So they could theoretically choose to hold on to the goods even if the market is tanking?
They could, although that might not always be the most practical or financially sound decision. The policy behind this is to prevent instability in the market. Imagine if buyers could just break contracts, knowing sellers would have to scramble to find the best possible resale price.
Yeah, it would create chaos.
Exactly. This rule helps ensure that fixed price contracts actually hold weight.
To make this crystal clear, let's paint a picture. Imagine if, instead of crashing, the price of grass seed had gone through the roof. Proceeds would have been ecstatic to get that seed at the original lower price, right?
Absolutely.
The fact that the market moved in the opposite direction doesn't change their initial agreement. The risk of that price drop was baked into the contract with Peace River.
And just to add to that, the court clarified that if Peace River did happen to make a profit from reselling some of the seed, that profit wouldn't be considered when calculating the market price damages under 2708.
Ah, so you don't get to double dip.
Exactly. Those two types of damages serve different purposes in compensating the seller.
Makes sense. All right, let's turn to the attorney fees part of this case. It seems like a perfect example of why being precise with contract language is so important.
Couldn't agree more. We talked about those norm seed rules incorporated into the contracts, right?
Right, the industry standards.
One of those rules stated that charges for collection of payment were Proceeds' responsibility.
So the big question is, does that vague phrasing actually cover attorney fees?
That's what the court had to figure out.
And remember, we have to keep in mind the American rule regarding attorney fees, which is pretty common in the U.S. Each party typically pays their own legal bills, unless there's a specific law or a clear agreement in the contract stating otherwise.
It's like splitting the check at a restaurant. Everyone pays their own way unless someone specifically says they're covering the bill.
Perfect analogy.
So the Oregon Supreme Court took a close look at charges for collection and ultimately concluded that it wasn't specific enough to include attorney fees.
So too vague to be enforceable.
Basically, they pointed out that the phrase itself didn't clearly state legal fees or litigation costs. It was more about general costs of collecting the payment, not about going to court.
And to make matters worse for Peace River, they couldn't prove that charges for collection was widely understood within the grass seed industry to include attorney fees.
Right. Even if they could have shown it was common industry jargon, it might have helped their case, but they didn't have the evidence.
Ouch. So what's the lesson here for those of us who, you know, maybe drafting contracts someday?
Be explicit, especially when it comes to who pays the legal bills if things go south.
So instead of charges for collection, you should say attorney fees explicitly.
Precisely. Using clear, unambiguous language like attorney fees is essential. Don't rely on implied meanings or general terms. Spell it out.
Great advice. So as we wrap up this deep dive, what are the key takeaways, especially for our law student listeners?
The biggest one is that this case reaffirms a core principle of contract law under the UCC. The goal is to ensure the seller is in the same position they would have been in if the contract had been fulfilled.
So making them whole again.
Exactly. And the UCC gives sellers options to calculate their damages if a buyer backs out of a deal.
Second takeaway.
When parties agree to a fixed price, they're both accepting the risks that come with potential market swings. A buyer can't just walk away when the market dips and expect the seller to bear the entire financial brunt.
Contracts are binding no matter which way the market goes.
Exactly. And finally, when it comes to attorney fees, make sure your contract language is crystal clear. If you want to be able to recover those fees, explicitly state that attorney fees are on the table.
Don't leave it up to interpretation.
Absolutely not.
So for our listeners, a final thought to ponder. How do you think the court's analysis would have played out if those contracts weren't for a set amount of seed, but were based on the buyer's needs over time? Or what if the drop in grass seed prices had been a slow decline instead of a sudden plunge? Food for thought. We also recommend checking out the UCC official comments on sections 2703 through 2710 for a deeper dive into this area of commercial law. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.